$1 billion forecasted over 5 years
right.
to invest in what we assume will be the existing building stock of Old Town. That's really what we expect those dollars will be used for. And as was mentioned, it's certainly possible that some of those projects could be mixed use projects. So it's already in intended use. I think as Sarah mentioned, we view the existing building projects as having bigger gaps because, in addition to whatever economics exist on rents versus what it costs to just do a building, you typically have a seismic piece that makes the gap even bigger. So the TIF dollars have been set aside in such a large quantity for the existing buildings.
Right, right.
A new construction building for housing has a much smaller gap. And so that the piece that's missing is just getting over the hump of where rents are versus where new construction rents would need to be. There's not a seismic issue. That's why the tools were differentiated in that way.
I get it. Okay. Yeah, and I guess, again, in terms of outcomes, I think we're all clear about what we want. We want new construction where we haven't had much, and we
right.
want a much faster rate of renovation of great old buildings that we're in danger of losing.
Right.
And what color of money, again, back to our earlier, is less important, I suspect, any of us than making sure that we're succeeding at both of those outcomes.
Right. We believe the hill to climb to get new construction going in the neighborhood is much smaller than it is for the existing building stock, just because the existing building stock is obviously there's a lot of buildings. We have a lot of work to do. And the gap on every project is so much bigger. So we think that the SDC piece is the seed investment that then triggers, as Sarah showed in her presentation, we have 500-unit goal. We estimate a total 1,900 additional or total, or what was it?
Developed every surface.
Right, so we think that's like gets us kick-started, and you push up rents, or you create the possibility of charging market rate rents is the better way to think about it, because rents are most part controls in the neighborhood, that you actually will then generate new construction on its own. I think we'll be financing the rehabilitation of existing buildings for quite a while in the neighborhood, and that's where why the TIF dollars are reserved for that purpose.
And Mayor, you know, some of us have argued for a long time that the 30% should not be seen as a hard cap, but I think we've all agreed that above the 30% TIF can be used as a flexible tool. And in fact, that mixed use development you're talking about and a preservation play with an older building with an eye towards housing and business is might be right in the wheelhouse of PDC, which has the 70% of the pie in terms of economic development and revitalization. So it's always been something I've supported.
Good. Other questions, comments?
Go ahead. I just want to ask, so the income requirements for an eligible new construction are what?
It's 60 to 100%.
61, okay, of median family income.
And just to also highlight something that Sarah also presented, which is, I don't know if it's different than the current 0-60, but we will underwrite every deal that applies for the SDC waiver to verify the funding gap in the pro forma, so that it's not simply that they're providing a unit in that price range, that they actually do have a funding gap as well. So that's not you don't simply get it because you're providing a unit in that price range.
Couple of questions. One, I was told recently that PDC has used TIF funds for parks construction in the amounts of about $19 million citywide and about $5 million in the River District in the past 5 years. Is that more or less accurate?
Yeah, I saw the same figures.
Okay.
We pulled those together. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, I am rather concerned about the 10-year issue. The idea that, I mean, I understand that the point is to get a diversity of incomes in the neighborhood, and that scratch what I was going to say. I mean, but I think that I do have a concern about the possibility, well, it might be a small possibility, that after 10 years, suddenly everybody is kicked out and you're charging and people are charging rents that only people in the top 1% can pay. Do you think that, and I apologize for not bringing this up earlier because I realize that we've got we're supposed to have a second reading next week and I don't have an amendment prepared, so this might push us back a bit, but do you think that it's feasible to explore some options which would put some kind of parameters on that possibility?
Yeah, I think we can look at it. I think the fundamental issue, which was raised earlier, is at what point is it just a tool that nobody uses? So the gap is small enough that to provide it to have a 10-year limit, you know, could push a project over the edge. But if it's locked into that for a long period of time, it might just be something, well, we take your dollars elsewhere. And, I just think it's useful to keep in mind. The issue isn't whether projects will happen or not happen within Old Town. I think we're seeing one of the largest housing booms, not the largest housing boom in the history of the city, and nothing is being built in Old Town. So it's the most likely the case if we do nothing that the new construction building boom will pass this neighborhood by. Mm-hmm. So, and all it means is that capital just goes elsewhere. It doesn't mean that, like, somebody decides, well, I'll do the project in Old Town anyway. It means they'll do a project somewhere else, and it won't happen. So I think we're just trying to figure out what's the right balance, and I think we can take a look at that and maybe have some more conversations about where we reach that point. And then I think the other thing it's useful to point out, which the mayor highlighted, which is, and someone should validate this, but I don't think on the 0 to 60% SDC waiver, it really ever happens that it's a loan. So the 60% requirement, the 60-year requirement, is never just because you got a little sliver of SDC waiver. It's because all your funding has come from sources that require this long-term kind of permanent affordability on it. So we're talking about a very small amount of money per project. And so how long they need to maintain the affordability, that's where they becomes, am I going to deal with
that? That's right. I mean, I am not suggesting that we require below 100% for 60 years, but I would like to see if there's something we can do, like, for example, between year 10 and year 20.
Right.
Where maybe you can't have 200% rent increases on in year 11.
Right. Right. I think we can look at that.
Patrick, I hesitate to ever qualify something you say publicly because you're one of the smartest people I know. But I will say that, you know, just looking at what we did on preservation and the 1,000 units we preserved downtown, our the city's skin in the game, the percentage of public dollars to private dollars to other dollars was very, very modest. And as you know, it varied by project.
Right.
But it was a dollar that triggered 60 years. It wasn't 10%, 20%,
right.
Whatever.
Right.
If we put a dollar in it, and we were sometimes the gap financing, we were sometimes TIF, depending on the tool, we were whatever, it triggered the 60 years. And I for one, don't think it has to be 60 years. I don't know, for example, what in Manhattan, what in New York City, what they put on Mitchell Lama. What I do know is that Mitchell Lama, Stuytown, and a lot of other middle-income housing is no longer middle-income because the covenants expired and the market changed and it was all converted. So I'd be interested to know what somewhere between 10 and 60 is the experience of other cities to maintain the affordability.
Yep. Okay.
The other thing we might want to think about, because one of my concerns about these debates is, again, thinking back to the density bonuses. As council has these big debates, we put these things in place, and 10 or 20 years later, a bureau shows up in front of us, whether it's the Planning Bureau or PDC, and says, in effect, well, that didn't work. And we remember that we have 14 different incentives in the zoning code, only two or three of which have been used. So it might be useful to have PDC report back annually on how this is working.
Did we get the first
100 units? Did we get the second 100 units?
Yeah.
Did we get the third 100? How are we doing?
Right.
Rather than have this all
be
added.
Report project by project.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, I do think this is enough of a pilot,
pilot
that we really, and we're going to look at every pro forma, so it's going to be something we can talk about as we go. I definitely think we should make that part of this, because I think this is what we're trying to learn. We're trying to activate the market here, as opposed to what I think on the seismic side is we're dealing with real renovation of existing building issues, which is a different challenge. So we want to see when we're tipping the market.
And I think we ought to do that more often in a lot of things.
Yeah.
I mean, Commissioner Novick's been talking about ways to get people to strap their houses down to the foundations.
Yeah.
Same kind of thing. Let's put some incentives in place. Try them for a year. See if we get 100 houses or 500 houses or 1,000
houses. Mayor, I'm going to text Commissioner Fritz after this meeting and say you've been channeling her vibe, because she's often the person at this time of our debate that says, can we get an annual report? But
happy to represent.
It's
a pilot project.
I think that's a wonderful idea.
Yeah, I think we should monitor more often than less, because then we won't be frustrated to say, gosh, we did that great plan 10 years ago, and it turned out to be a shelf study. And I hate it when that happens.
Can I put a few questions in the record? And I don't expect to get answers to these now, but given the time, and Mayor and I will be leaving soon for another event.
I think I'm at the same event.
So. You are.
I think you're at the same event.
Paid for it. You should be there.
That's right.
Well, not only did they pay for it, but the city shifted to PDC project management to get a higher MWESB, and your agency performed brilliantly.
Oh, thanks.
And you are to be
commended. It's another park we paid for it, too. So.
You are to be commended. Commissioner Novick has raised the question of why 10, you know, is 10 years enough? And I guess one of my questions is just learning more about how did you settle on 10 and how flexible is that? Because okay. The goal is to preserve affordable middle-income housing. The second question on my list was any analysis that you've done that tells us that the package before us is the but-for package. And presumably, you don't have a study, but you've talked to some developers who have said, with this mix, we're going to do something. So I'd like to know a little bit more about that. This conversation has been going on for a while. In fact, Ed McNamara is no longer here. At some point in the discussion, did you give us a map of opportunity sites? Did you give us a map of places that would be in play with this package of that could
not,
be in play?
Not specific to the SDC pilot program, but with the action plan as a whole, we've identified sites where we've had conversations with property owners.
Is that public or is that private? I mean, is that?
Yeah.
No, it's public.
You have a coded
map.
We can.
No, it's not that. No, it's something we can easily share.
So we're saying that we're hoping something happens, and I'd be interested in looking at a map and just color coded, seeing where are the
any surface parking lot. You can start with that.
And that also helps us with the follow up oversight. I raised a question earlier about alternatives, the SDC waiver, and maybe I'm completely out of touch on this issue. It wouldn't be the first one, and I hear that from my wife and my daughter on a regular basis. But did you consider other tools, including TIF, a deferral, not a waiver, property taxes, general fund, social impact bonds? Did you consider any other tool other than an SDC waiver for that component?
I think we can get you a more definitive answer on that. I think we considered some of those. I don't think we considered that whole list. I've already walked through why we created a separate tool than just doing it with TIF. And let me just say for a second that just because you talked about this a lot with the first panel was the main difference between this just being different colors of money is the opportunity cost. So opportunity cost is the main difference. We're talking about a pot of money that doesn't exist right now. So you're not making a choice not to fund something else. If you general fund or TIF or whatever, right, you could issue bond, but then debt service is an opportunity cost. There's no opportunity cost because this money doesn't exist right now. So I think that was the leading rationale on that. If we take it from TIF, whatever pot, whether it's affordable housing dollars or PDC dollars, we're not doing something else, right?
But are TIF dollars eligible?
Sure. I mean, TIF, both. I mean, TIF dollars, yeah, sure, TIF dollars are eligible.
So I just want to...
You can build a building with TIF, yeah.
And we could fund a little pot of money that we use to offset SDC exemptions and just reimburse bureaus for whatever that portion of that cost is.
Yeah, it's still cash subsidy coming from something else. As opposed to non-cash deferred...
There's a difference in my mind between the enterprise zone and TIF.
Yeah.
Like we use the enterprise zone quite effectively to leverage significant investment that we would never get through TIF because what we're doing is we're using property tax revenue that never existed.
I understand.
We're waiting for it for 5 years, and in the process, we leverage it 25 times.
Well, every 2 years, we go back to Salem and have to defend tax expenditures that are being put under a microscope. I understand the difference, but I just want to make sure I know what the alternative ways of funding are, and front door and back door.
Yeah.
And I guess I get the difference. You've put 4 different SDC exemptions into the pot. Is that because they get to the dollar amount that the developers have said they have to have at least that much subsidy? Is that your best bet, or is there an argument that you could take 2 of the 4 and still get bang for the buck?
Two answers. One, we looked at four different prototypes or models of development based on lot size, development potential. Some of these models did require all four bureaus. We also wanted to look at how do we most closely follow the existing SDC exemption program, make as few tweaks as possible while putting a couple safeguards in place, such as the underwriting process and the unit cap to put some safeguards in place to limit impacts to those bureaus.
Okay. A couple other questions. Do we have a market study or its equivalent as to what we think the market will be in Old Town Chinatown for this kind of housing?
We do that as part of the Jerry Johnson.
I know you've done those in other urban renewal districts to look at just what's the market.
We didn't look at market demand so much as the lack of existing.
So one of your first questions, we'll make sure you have the analysis of, we did an analysis of kind of where the gap is on different prototypes. So that was a third-party analysis that was done, but not on market demand.
Big topic of conversation recently is about displacement. The premise of this plan is we're adding capacity, and we're building capacity where there isn't any. We've done that in other parts of the city and still generated some momentum towards displacement. So how might displacement occur if this plan is successful and we begin to introduce not only middle-income housing but a hotter market for commercial and residential? Could it lead to any displacement of existing people, and could it put any pressure on buildings that currently house low-income people?
Most of the social service providers in Old Town Chinatown own their properties, so that gives them greater protection than if they were renters, as well as the affordable housing developers as well, and then those have the income restrictions in place for the 60 years, as we've discussed. So that gives them greater certainty towards their long-term future.
I would think this neighborhood is about as well protected as from that as you can imagine. I don't think there's anything that's protect. I mean, so I would see the commercial, like retail spaces, I think you might see more pressure on rents and that. And so, you know, as you fill out the retail environment, it might become a more attractive environment from a retail standpoint. And, you know, I still think there's a lot of capacity for office use, but you know, it'll push up rents in that regard. Anybody who might be leasing space because it's really affordable might find that eventually that dynamic to change. But the main, right, the bulk of the housing units are restricted, so that dynamic's not going to change. And then so many of the property owners are institutions that aren't going anywhere.
So in 2001, Commissioner Saltzman sponsored something called the No Net Loss Policy, and it was supported by then Commissioner Hales and other members of the council. It actually requires an annual report to council on the inventory of downtown housing, and we have to have an affirmative strategy to replace lost units or preserve existing units. So I don't know to what extent you've been coordinating this discussion with the Housing Bureau, but if we're going to do an annual report on the impact of these tools and what we're getting, I'd like to couple that with a report on no net loss to find out if there has been a displacement, and particularly in light of experience of this council that we've been dealing with issues in inner Northeast Portland and other places, I'd like to be a little more ahead of the curve. If there is displacement, and that could be the result of many factors, we have a policy that says we have to be engaged in mitigating that. That could be replacement housing or whatever. I guess with the list of opportunity areas, those are the questions I have for now, and I look forward to it.
Great. Other questions, requests? Well, thank you, Patrick and Sarah. Thanks to the Community Association for the great work on preparing this plan. It will come back next week for second reading.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your time.
And we are adjourned.
Good egg.
I need you for a second.
Sure.